Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that's not only your one-stop shop for all of the most important stuff that happened during the week, but also is a place where we can talk about the existence of deceptions, false flags, and other suppressed issues. I'm Kevin Barrett with Greg McCarron sitting in for Jeremy Rothkuschel and Anthony Hall. Hey, welcome, Greg. Good to have you.
I'm glad to be here. I've really enjoyed the shows you and Jeremy have been doing as of late, so I'm very honored to be in his place. So.
Well, I'm really happy to have you, and I think it's an honor, too. I mean, looking at the people we've had on here, you know, and Tony and Jeremy in particular, it's been such a great chance for me to talk about what happened each week with some really brilliant people, and so that's continuing Absolutely. Now. So what's this business about the word false flag, which nobody had heard of in 2001, except for the people who teach it in military academies, which is ubiquitous worldwide. Every military academy teaches all about false flags, and crisis initiation is a euphemism for them. But now the BBC tells us, as we see in the next slide, that anybody who uses the term false flag is a Russian butt. And they even brought on some real people that they accused of being Russian butts because they talk about false flag operations. Greg, are you a Russian butt?
Well, I must be. If the BBC is to be believed, then I must be. But honestly, speaking of, that's their definition of a Russian bot. I'd rather be a Russian bot than what they would define as a patriot.
A British butt?
What is the opposite of a Russian bot? A patriot? I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, this propaganda video was so over the top. It's really pretty hilarious. I mean, they're supposedly pushing back against Russian propaganda, and yet the techniques of this video are the most insidious but obvious kind of, you know, pure appeal to confusion and emotions rather than logical thinking. It's quite hilarious the way they have the guy drinking at the bar, getting drunk, looking at TV. He sees RT, and now, oh my goodness, his worldview has been shattered. He's in confusion. What could be true? Maybe nothing's true. Maybe I'm going to fall down the rabbit hole. Oh my goodness, the red pill is being forced down my throat. Help! I mean, what a pathetic piece of trash from the BBC.
Yeah, it's and unfortunately, it's par for the course. You know, James Corbett's video, James Corbett made a "Shut Up, Conspiracy Theorist." That about sums it up, I think, because that's what they want.
Okay, shout out to James Corbett.
They just want you to shut up and accept whatever you're told without questioning it. March in lockstep with the agenda at play and not question anything. So,
indeed. It's really too bad because, I mean, BBC occasionally puts out some good stuff. The documentary film that they put out several years back, actually over a dozen years back, I think now, The Power of Nightmares, came out right after 9/11. And that tells us a whole lot about what 9/11 was really about, which is it was the neocons. I mean, they don't come quite right out and say it, but sure. They walk tiptoe right up to the edge in that BBC-produced documentary. Watch it. It's called The Power of Nightmares. And it tells you how the neocons fabricated a radical Islamic threat and blew up the Trade Center. They don't say blew up the Trade Center, but they tell you everything else. So the BBC can do good stuff, but yeah.
Yeah. You can take the information in there and put it together and then kind of figure out for yourself what happened. But you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So people haven't seen The Power of Nightmares. It's definitely worth reviewing. Moving on to the issue of Russian bots talking about false flags. I guess everybody who noticed that Colin Powell's vial of fake anthrax when he hyped the Iraqi chemical weapons threat must be Russian. But I think the whole population of the planet pretty much qualifies as a Russian butt. And here we have Sputnik News pointing out that false flags are real. And here are what they call the top 8 false flags in history. I wasn't so sure they got exactly the top 8, but what do you think?
I actually, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read through this article before we started.
Okay. Well, here's, I'll give you the list right now. I happen to have it in front of me. Okay. They say the top 8 false flags in history were, number 1, the Reichstag fire, and then moving down the list, the Colin Powell anthrax hoax, the Mukden incident, that's the one that started the Japanese war on China. The Japanese blew up some railroad tracks and blamed it on China. The 1930s incident that brought the U.S. big time into Vietnam. Maine, blown up in Havana Harbor to start the Spanish-American War in 1898. the Manila false flag. That was one I didn't even really know much about, that started the Soviet-Finnish Winter War in 1939. And here we have the Sputnik admitting that that was the Russians that, wow, that carried out this alleged Finnish attack. We have Operation Gleiwitz, otherwise known as Operation Himmler, in which the Germans staged a fake Polish attack to launch World War II. We have the 64 BC Fire of Rome, in which burned down Rome. Nero burns Rome and blames it on Christians, a little bit like burning the church and blaming it on the Muslims. We have the 8-point planter plot, which launched the British Empire. And there are a number of others they missed too. The Zimmerman telegram, Archduke Ferdinand assassination, the Moscow apartment bombings. You can't talk about that on Russian media.
No, nope,
we
go
talk
there
about it because we're not Russian butts.
Exactly.
Okay.
Can't
so,
go
so,
there
so, so, do you think they should have mentioned 9/11, Pearl Harbor, and the gunpowder plot for the top 10? I mean, I certainly do.
Absolutely, and I think that almost the fact that 9/11 is not mentioned, that may say a lot about where, say, an outlet such as Sputnik is and is not willing to go.
Indeed, indeed. And why won't Sputnik go there? I mean, here are the Russians. Yeah. As the BBC, at least, is they're correct about one thing, which is that the Russian media right now is exposing these latest two false flags, the Skripal and the Duma pair of chemical weapons false flags. The Russian media is doing that. So why won't the Russian media go the whole hog and tell us about the 9/11 false flags that launched this whole world takeover operation?
Well, you had Daniel Bushel a few years ago on The Truth Seeker. I believe you appeared on his program, actually, on his 9/11 program. But ever since then, you know, there hasn't been much of anything coming out of RT or other Russian state media about this topic. So unfortunately, it's been seriously lacking, and there may, you know, reasons for that probably go into another time. But
well, I'm still trying to figure it out because I've been personally invited on RT several times since then, and then at the last second, I've been canceled. This has happened at least three times, and it's getting really annoying. And this all started. RT completely shut up about 9/11 right after its founder was murdered in a hotel room in Washington, D.C. So maybe that was a message. I don't know. Maybe it was a hostile takeover from some Russian oligarchs that are involved with Israel and the 9/11 thing. I don't know. But something's going on with RT. Come on, Russian media, wake up. Talk about 9/11. Okay, and maybe they'll the Russian media will explain to us what happened to all of that World Trade Center steel. How many tons was taken away and recycled right after 9/11? Ridiculous amount of it. And so now we have architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth naming the people responsible, including Giuliani, Kenneth Holden. Yeah. So can we go and grab these guys and slap some handcuffs on them, do a citizen's arrest or something?
It's funny how we were told, you know, Trump said, I'm going to, you know, we're going to find out what happened to the towers. Yet the man who's being implicated as being the primary person responsible for the covering up of this evidence with this World Trade Center steal, well, he's now just happens to be on Donald Trump's legal team defending him.
What a coincidence. Yeah, well, Trump said a lot of interesting things about 9/11, but they're kind of all over the map, and I'm not sure that he was ever the guy who was going to expose the cover-up.
A lot of them were also very disproportionately focused on Saudi Arabia as well. So
that's right. He said, elect me, and you'll find out who really blew up the World Trade Center. Interesting choice of words. And it was the Saudis, hint, hint, or you have to look at Saudi Arabia or something like that, basically telling us it was the Saudis. And so we elect him, and rather than blowing the whistle on that, not just the Saudis who supplied the patsies, but the Israelis who blew up the Trade Center, Trump instead is sending his kosher Nostra son-in-law, Jared Cohen, over to Saudi Arabia to cozy up to the very people that Trump himself accused of blowing up the Trade Center.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Trump for you. Okay. So, these guys really did blatantly conduct criminal destruction of evidence. Virtually all the steel was immediately sent to scrap yards where it was cut up, shipped away, melted down for reuse before it was inspected. That's a direct quote from the New York Times. But a little bit of the steel was saved for bourbon. That's right. In the next slide,
this is something else.
Horse soldier bourbon made from World Trade Center steel. What? Bourbon made out of steel? Wow. I'm glad I'm a Muslim and a teetotaler. How about you?
This is something else. I mean, these are coming from combat veterans, and that makes it really disturbing. So, I mean, you have to ask the question, are these combat veterans that are purportedly behind this? Are they really this They really this deceived in their what they believe they were fighting for, or is this part of some type of message or operation? I'm not sure, but I'd hate to, I hate this makes you realize just how much deceit there is within the ranks of our military and with the military veterans. And I mean that they this is a message to them. I guess this is their way of showing that our fight is right because we're remembering what happened, what those evil terrorists did to the World Trade Center towers by putting the steel in our bourbon. I don't know, but I mean it's a very disturbing precedent whether it's intentionally malicious or not.
Well, if these are the special forces guys who helped the Israelis blow up the Trade Center, and we don't know who they are, all the press release says is the founders are a group of special operations officers who answered the call to defend the country just days after the events, blah, blah, blah.
Maybe they're friends with Eric
Well,
Prince. You never know.
maybe so. Or maybe the whole thing is a hoax and some shyster has just dreamed up this PR line without ever inviting any special forces guys in. Such things have been known to happen. In any case, I guess they're drinking to forget. Drinking to forget what that World Trade Center steel would have told us if it wasn't all immediately melted down for scrap. And there you go. World
By Trump's
Trade Center
legal,
steel in my bourbon. What's that special flavor? Is that nanothermite?
yeah.
Is that
By Trump's
radioactive
legal team
strontium?
representative, yeah. By Trump's legal representative Giuliani, yeah, who was also the key player in the FBI exposing, reopening the Clinton investigation, very coincidentally.
Right. What a bunch of low-life scumbags to take over the country and drive it into a series of ruinous and genocidal wars. Anyway, moving on to more
Did you
ruinous and
want
genocidal wars.
Hitlery, Kevin? Did you want Hitlery to be elected president? Come on
No.
now.
Next slide. All right, we have the Nakba Day catastrophe. The Nakba means catastrophe or Palestinian Holocaust, the 1948 mass murder of a huge number of Palestinians to terrorize the rest into fleeing their homeland. And so every year on May 15th, there's a mournful commemoration of that as the Israelis wildly celebrate the genocide they perpetrated. This happens every year. And this year, it's going to be really out of control because we have the Palestinians doing the Great March of Return. They're camping and protesting next to the barbed wire fence surrounding their Gaza concentration camp. And the Israeli pre-positioned snipers with orders to kill have already murdered more than 40, and there are 5,511 who've been wounded. Well over 1,000 with basically severely permanently disabling injuries. And none of these people were armed. None of them posed any threat to anybody. So, Greg, is it time to nuke Israel or is that an exaggeration?
Well, I wouldn't say it's time to. I can't in good faith say
That's
make a
a
statement
question, not
like
a
that.
statement.
I understand. I can't make good faith, really entertain any type of possibility like that. But I will say it's interesting watching in this day and age, in the age of Trump and Netanyahu, watching the more quote unquote liberal Zionist publications such as Haaretz cover these issues. I mean, here's Haaretz telling you what's going on. You've got Haaretz editorials all the time that are constantly railing about the how bad things have gotten under Netanyahu and the shift to the right, but they're still continue, of course, to run cover for the great Israeli experiment in general. And it's as if, oh, Israel was great before Netanyahu got there. It's just like how here in America, the resistance with all the memorializing of the Bush family with Barbara passing on. Oh, America was so great before Trump came along. Now Trump has destroyed our democracy. So I mean, you're still seeing the cover-up for these crimes continue within these liberal Zionist publications, even when Haaretz, more or less, when you're able to read between the lines, it gives you a ton of useful information, but they're still covering for these crimes, and they're still going to commemorate the Independence Day just like the rest of the media. So that's what I find most interesting about this, is that you're getting a lot of facts, but you're also still getting a lot of cover up here.
Yeah, indeed. And you're right. I think there's a parallel between, the US was terrible before Trump, and in a sense, with Trump represents something even worse, really. And
I mean, I
likewise,
saw,
Netanyahu, yeah.
there were people saying, oh, the Bushes, they at least did what was right for their country. Trump puts himself first. And then you got people acting like that with regards to Israel. I mean, are we going to start calling Shamir and Begin these great heroes compared to Netanyahu? I mean,
Yeah. So, definitely it's bad to worse. Natalie Portman doesn't seem to quite get that. All these liberal Zionists, just imagine that. Well, yeah, the whole thing is all about a genocide of the Palestinians, but it wasn't really that bad until Netanyahu came along.
and then the
Right.
anti-Zionist Zionist, as Gilad Atzmon calls them, they will They'll expose a lot more, but they'll also not unwilling to continue to address the actual evidence, the documented evidence, which points to the same country as carrying out these genocidal murders of the Palestinians as being the primary force behind the event, which is created and perpetuated this war on terrorism that continues to be fought. So.
Well, that's a good point. Although I do think that Gilad may broach that subject in his next series of talks. He's doing a talk on the truth and Palestine. So he's actually coming here to Madison, where he'll be speaking
Cool.
on May 10th in Madison, Wisconsin. And people can find out more about that. I think I have that up at the Sifting and Winnowing blogspot site, which is uwsw.blogspot.com. Gilad is not 9/11 truth unfriendly. He just hasn't gotten into the detailed evidence yet himself, but I think he is very much a closet truther. But I know Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are probably not truthers of any kind. They're professional liars and criminals, and here they are over in heading for Jerusalem for the May 15th or 14th, I guess, celebration of the genocide, where all the Israelis dance around the way they celebrate it. Every year they celebrate the murder of 70,000 Persians on Purim, and they celebrate the firstborn Egyptians being slaughtered on Passover. And now they're going to be every year they celebrate the genocide of the Palestinians. So Trump and Kushner are over there to do that, to dance on the graves of the Palestinian genocide victims. And they're also going to be inaugurating the U.S. Embassy alongside the Rothschild reptilian U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin. So the only
Wow.
country that is also moving its embassy is Guatemala, which is another genocidal country that killed 500,000 to
Oh,
a
yeah.
million of its native citizens a couple of decades ago.
With Israelis covertly, directly, covertly, directly via covert means, we're helping out with that too during the war, dirty
Indeed,
wars
they're
that you mentioned.
genocide specialists.
Yeah.
So Kushner, so th this is the most outrageous provocation in all of human history, as far as I'm concerned. All of these events converging at the same time: Nakba Day, the Israeli dance of celebrating genocide, and now this is going to happen right at the moment that Trump
Yeah.
may pull out of the Iran agreement and
Yeah,
the U.S.
wow.
embassy moves to Jerusalem. Thereby seemingly recognizing the Antichrist's domain in the world and in the Middle East and in the Holy Land. So this is completely crazy. And here we are
Yeah.
reciting a Times of Israel article, which of course has a slightly different viewpoint.
Yeah, and the guy, whoever's writing this, there's a lot of focus on Abbas and the Palestinian leadership basically telling Palestinians, don't worry about what Israel's doing to you. Worry about your own corrupt leadership. That's almost the message I got out of this article. It's like, oh, they're so upset. They're still going on about the Nakba. Worry about your own leadership and stop worrying about Israel. That's what message I got, a big part of the message I got from this article. But this is shaping up to be a huge provocation, a huge event, something huge. You get the impression something really major is going to be going down in May with all of these things coming together. And I'll throw one more thing in here. I'm not going to focus on this too much, but there's also a lot of talk within Messianic Christian and Jewish circles about the importance of the temple in Jerusalem. And you got to wonder, I mean, what if something were to happen to this temple that would inspire the building of this third temple, which is supposed to be the major prophecy? I wonder sometimes if we're not focusing enough on that too. I mean, it's not a topic for another day, but in the process of all this, I don't think that can be entirely dismissed. That's a big part of the messianic fervor that was behind Trump within the hardcore Orthodox Zionist community. So.
Absolutely, Greg, you're absolutely right about that. The founder of Zionism was not Theodor Herzl, the secular nationalist. The founder of Zionism was Shabtai Zvi, the self-proclaimed false messiah and antichrist, whose career culminated in the year 1666. And that messianic
That's an
fervor is
ironic year.
that's what Zionism is all about. It's saying we're Satanists. We're going to overthrow God, because in Judaism, God says you can't go back to the Holy Land until God makes it happen. You can't lift one finger to make it happen. That's the official Jewish belief. But the Satanists who emerged out of Judaism said, no, Satan rebelled against God, and we're going to rebel against God imitating Satan by going to Jerusalem and taking it ourselves in this life. That's what Shabtai Zvi said in 1666. That's what Theodor Herzl was really about. That's what the Rothschilds are really about. That's what the whole project is really about. They want to destroy the Masjid al-Aqsa, the Islamic world's greatest architectural monument, a monument to peace, harmony, and spirituality involving all three monotheistic faiths, because that's where the Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, ascended to heaven, meeting Jesus and Moses along the way. They want to destroy that and put up a blood sacrifice temple. That's what Zionism really is.
And all in the process of it, they tell all, you know, trust us, Christians. We love you. All of your bought and paid for Christian Zionist leaders tell you how much we love you. So trust them.
Yeah, trust a Zionist. That'll be the day. Okay, moving on to another day, another Mossad assassination. Here we have the Israelis assassinating Fadi al-Bach, who's a Palestinian engineering professor in Malaysia, or he was until he was slaughtered by these Israeli assassins, which the Israeli government is even openly claiming credit for. And here we have Richard Silverstein pointing out that it would seem that this will endanger Israeli academics who specialize in the same engineering fields as those of all of these murdered Palestinian professors, because they slaughter Palestinian professors left and right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, if it would be very sad if some Israeli professor who's actually a nice guy gets killed by somebody trying to deter these kinds of attacks, or maybe 50 Palestinian or Israeli professors somehow get killed somewhere where they're meeting or something like that. That would be very sad for those who are decent people, but it is absolutely what people have to do to try to dissuade these attacks, right? I mean, what else can they do? Richard Silverstein, Jewish himself, is basically admitting this. So the Israelis are basically trying to force folks to stand up and kill Israeli professors in response to this and to try to stop this from happening.
Well, due to the disproportionate control of media and of public opinion, I mean, they'd make that out to be another Munich, where you'd have, you know, big Hollywood movies directed about it if this were to happen to Jewish or Israeli Zionist figures the same way it happens to Palestinians. I know that, I believe it was H.R.A.P. Brown said that violence is as American as apple pie. We'll have to find a suitable suitable Israeli-centric product to describe, to compare when you say that to Israel, political assassinations are as Israeli as pick a good Hebrew type product there, and you've got your comparison. I mean, it is to Israel what violence is to America. So
that's right. Yeah, they're the world's leaders in assassinating their political and intellectual opponents. In fact, Mossad hit teams went all over Iraq after the U.S. invasion, assassinating the Iraqi scientific intelligentsia to make sure Iraq would never pose a threat to Israel again. That's what the murder of Iraq was really all about. That's why they blew up the Trade Center, murdering 3,000 Americans, was to get over there and massacre Iraq and massacre the other seven countries in 5 years. The next target, the final target on that seven country hit list, because they've already really wrecked six of those countries, is Iran. And they're hoping to wreck Iran too. And a lot of folks think that's why Trump was elected, was precisely to do this, because Trump himself apparently hates Iran. He did say that the reason he threw his hat in the ring was because he hates the Iran nuclear deal. So here we have Foreign Minister Zarif telling us that if the U.S. pulls out, the deal is dead.
Well, once again, this is another event. May is shaping up to be a huge month, and we'll talk about the next story here with that Trump warning of bigger problems if the nuke program is not fixed. I got another point to make with regards to the next story on the slide here. The next two stories, actually.
Right. So, wonder what those bigger problems he's referring to are. Well, with Trump, you just never know, because the guy is a blowhard, and whatever comes out of his mouth, you can't really put much importance on it. But of course, it is very entertaining if you like your reality show politics. In the next slide, we see the commander of the Iranian Navy saying an offhand threat. This was, again, Times of Israel, I think. So they're naturally spinning to exaggerate this. But in this offhand remark, he is referring to the fact that Iran is in a position to sink a lot of U.S. ships if it wants to. Iran rules the Persian Gulf. It has anti-ship missiles, Chinese and Russian sunburn type anti-ship missiles that can take out ships. And so they can close down the Persian Gulf and sink a lot of American ships anytime they want to.
Yeah, and clearly, unfortunately, all it takes is one incident. I mean, all it takes is something. You know, this is a powder keg that could blow up at any moment. And I'll say that we're going to talk about North Korea in a few minutes, but it does appear that Trump has people behind him who are far more fixated with Iran than with North Korea. And I mean, if you look at the people that are coming in here, John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, if you look at these people, you just take them at their word. Anybody who cares about peace and wants to see a less violent, less chaotic world, you need to be very, very concerned with these people coming in, because this is far worse for cabinet than Hillary Clinton could have ever dreamed of assembling when it comes to something like Iran. So,
absolutely. And we actually had a good article in the New York Times this week. That's a real man bites dog story, but it's true. The next story by Madawi al-Rashid, who is a Saudi historian, points out that the hatred of Iran that we're getting from bin Salman and the top Saudi leadership is really all about manipulating domestic politics, because these people have ruined their country. They've robbed their country. They're in a very precarious position. Everybody in Middle East studies has been just waiting for the Saudi dynasty to topple for a couple of decades now. Could happen any moment. And so to try to rally public opinion and try to get people into this right-wing nationalistic Saudi and then pseudo-Sunni kind of mentality, they're using billions of dollars to buy propaganda to whip up hatred of Iran. So it's primarily a domestic thing.
And every now and then, as you said, we'll get these good articles out of here. As a matter of fact, the New York Times, a lot of the time, because I think there are people within the sphere of influence at the New York Times who, in a lot of ways, I think, see the, you know, they're not, it's not going to stop them from continuing to saber rattle about a fictional nuclear threat with Iran. But at the same time, a lot of these people, I think they don't want to see a major war. There's a lot of people within the media, within the more, I guess, neoliberal elements that do not want to see like a major military conflict with the country like Iran. So every now and then you'll get articles like this to come out, while in general, much like liberal Zionism continues to protect Israel, they'll continue to perpetuate these narratives which lead to these conflicts. But at the same time, you'll see pushback every now and then. This might be an example of that.
Indeed it is. In the next slide, we have Russia supplying Syria with new missile defense systems. It looks like the false flag duo of the Skripal and Duma chemical weapons events may be backfiring. It's actually causing the Russians to backtrack on their promise not to give Syria S-300 surface-to-air defense missiles. And so this is a major step for the Russians to do that, and also to up their ante in terms of helping Iran defend itself. And of course, Israel doesn't like this. As we see in the next slide, we have the Israelis telling us that is this the Israeli one? There's the Israelis say that catastrophic consequences, the Russians say that catastrophic consequences will ensue if the Israelis hit them. And the Israelis say we will hit them if we want to.
Definitely on the surface, this looks to be a positive development if indeed Russia is going to step up its defense of Syria, contrary to U.S. and Israeli ambitions. I will say that I'll just throw out, play devil's advocate here, I'll throw out another alternative view, and it comes from, I would look into the work of people like Andrew Korybko. Andrew Korybko is a geopolitical analyst. He comes at it from a very pro-Russian, pro-Eurasianist perspective in terms of kind of turning over U.S. Western global hegemony. But he argues that Russian-Israeli relations are better than ever, and that a lot of people within the alternative media might not be entirely accurate regarding the extent of hostilities between Russia and Israel. So I would throw that out there as a alternative view to a lot of what we're hearing here. But on the surface, this is a positive development if true. I just had to throw out this other perspective that's out there from people like Andrew Korybko. So
interesting. Well, speaking of other perspectives, how about Dean Henderson's? Dean does great work over at Left Hook. And here he has a very succinct summary of the pipeline politics behind the war on Syria, pointing out that the Rothschilds are the players behind so-called Genie Energy, which is an Israeli company that's exploring in the Golan Heights, which is occupied Syria, Israeli-occupied Syria. And they're also working on this pipeline, which the one they want would go from Qatar and basically avoid Iran and go through Israel, whereas the Iranians have an alternative pipeline proposal through Syria. It ends up on the Mediterranean. So there's a huge war over which pipeline will be bringing natural gas out of the Middle East to Europe, and that's and the Rothschild faction is the one that's pushing for the destruction of Syria to try to get their pipeline put through.
Yeah, and maybe this might also explain some of the hostility toward Qatar. You never know. But another interesting figure, and this wasn't mentioned in the article, but he is a figure affiliated with this whole Genie Energy, Rothschild, Syria thing, and that's one Michael Glasner. Michael Glasner is another person who ties you back to Trump and perhaps the elements of the swamp that are not being drained when it comes to Donald Trump. I mean, Michael Glasner worked under Lou Eisenberg at the time that the World Trade Center was privatized just prior to the September 11th attacks. I believe he left the New York, New Jersey Port Authority just after the privatization deals were made in the summer of 2001. Went on there to become the chief of staff and kind of a propaganda specialist for the parent company of Genie Energy. And then from there was the, I believe, Southwest Regional Director for AIPAC. What was he doing in 2016? He was Donald Trump's campaign deputy manager. And now for 2020, he's the COO of the Trump re-election campaign that's going on to for 2020. So there's significant Trump swamp creature connections to this whole Genie Energy Syria Rothschild plot with these oil machinations.
That's right. Well, I guess if you want to elect somebody who knows the swamp to try and drain it, I guess you could try to say Trump might be the guy, but I think he knows the swamp a little too well from the inside. Well, how about the Korea thing, Greg? We have North Korea suspending nuclear tests, and Trump says, very good news. That's the official version we're getting in the media here. But in the next slide, we see that what really just happened was that North Korea just declared itself a nuclear power and said it will behave the same as all the other nuclear powers. If you actually read their declaration, it's very, very clear. You know, it says that the work has been successfully carried out on two fronts, meaning the missiles and the bombs to carry them. They can now hit targets in North America. They can blow up Washington, D.C. if they want to. That's all they wanted. Now they've reached that point, and they can suspend the test because they've already successfully tested their systems. So that's the real import of this news. And if Trump thinks that's good news, I guess that's good news.
Well, another one. This is another one of the things on the surface, even though there's so much more to this than anything we're getting from, you know, from within so much of the media. I mean, on the surface, it looks, oh, Koreas are meeting. There may be some type of major breakthrough. That's, you know, that could very well be a positive development. And of course, you know, North Korea is going to continue to be demonized because it feels like it has the right to have the same type of capabilities as any other countries that have stockpiles of nuclear weapons, Israel, United States, you know. But I think, though, just like, leave it to me, the Russian bot, false conspiracy theorists, to throw out there an alternative narrative, which might kind of rain on some people's parades. But, I mean, we got to look at this also from the lens of what we talked about earlier. Is, quote-unquote, peace being made with Korea, perhaps, to just continue to tighten the proverbial noose around Iran, because that's where the real focus of the people behind and surrounding Trump is.
So. Yeah, I think you're right about that, Greg. Isn't it interesting that the non-existent Iranian nuclear threat has everybody freaking out, whereas North Korea uses the most reckless rhetoric, repeatedly, dozens of times, has threatened to incinerate Washington, D.C. They just developed the capability to do that, and Trump says it's good news, and the media seems to agree.
Yeah. It's the worst claims Ahmadinejad was alleged to have made times a thousand.
Exactly. The Iranians, who are very reasonable, rational, and law-abiding, international law-abiding people who haven't attacked another country in many centuries, are being blown up as a huge threat. Why is that? Well, that's because they, like me and billions of other people around the world, say it's time to end the genocide of occupied Palestine. And they put their money where their mouth is. That's the only reason that Iran is in the crosshairs. Okay, moving on to Trump cover-ups. Greg, we got great Trump cover-up stories this week. This is crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not great in the sense of good news. No, but yeah, here we have Trump continuing the JFK cover-up, postponing the release of records until October 2021. in contravention of the JFK Records Act passed in 1992 that said that all records must be disclosed within 25 years. But that's not happening, thanks to Mr. Drain the Swamp.
Yeah, just look at who was behind, who signed that JFK Records thing, either. Like, he actually meant that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, George H.W. Bush, yeah.
But with regards to Trump, I mean, I'm confused, Kevin, because Alex Jones and Roger Stone, they told me that Trump was going to release all the files. He was really going to expose the deep state's machinations in assassinating Kennedy. So I'm really confused here. I mean, you mean to tell me that he's
playing 10D chess, Greg. Trump is playing 10D chess. He's such an obvious genius.
Well, he is playing this chess game, but I mean there's gotta be a series. Either, you know, he's either, this is another genius chess move, or else the deep state has once again just completely, you know, cucked him into submission here, and or you know, he's just so good faith believing in the what is described as a national security threat. He really wants to tell people who killed Kennedy, but he just can't. And we're going to have to accept this. I mean, and you know, either you have to accept that Trump has another major motivation behind doing this, or else, I mean, he's being threatened, and people behind him, people around him, are trying to keep this information from coming out. I mean, anything but the most obvious and logical conclusion is what we're supposed to.
Well, Greg, I mean, Trump obviously is a made man. So then you ask, who made him? Well,
exactly.
It's pretty Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn was the major player, Kosher Nostra bigwig, who ran New York for the Kosher Nostra. And he was a key figure in the murders of both John and Robert Kennedy. That's the guy who created Donald Trump. It was Roy Cohn. Yeah. So once you know that, you
also the mentor of Alex Jones's best buddy, Roger Stone.
So. Yeah, I don't know what those guys are thinking or smoking or, you know, whatever. But anyway, here's another great Trump scandal. The Stormy Daniels payoff thing is getting out of control as his lawyer, Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleads the Fifth Amendment. Oh, my goodness. This is kind of hilarious. Never in history has any sitting president had a lawyer invoke the Fifth Amendment. And then in the next slide, we see Trump has had some interesting comments about the Fifth Amendment. He says, when he was debating Crooked Hillary, he said, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
I don't think Trump supported the Fifth Amendment when it came to accusing those the black kids in New York of raping this jogger. I don't think he supported their Fifth Amendment rights. But I mean, you know, the Stormy Daniels thing, I think
they were innocent. They didn't need to take the Fifth.
But I mean, Trump, he certainly didn't support the. He was writing op-eds about how guilty they were back, or ads or whatever he was doing back then. I mean, with Central Park Five. But you know, the Stormy thing, I think a lot of it is, and also the story is going to follow this, I think a lot of that is perhaps just media circus, just to get the masses just all something to talk about with Stormy and the PP tape and all that. But at the same time, though, I mean, with Michael Cohen, I mean, there's some very dangerous. Dangerous areas that could be really gotten into with these, particularly, you know, going into some of these deals that were being made in Trump Tower with figures such as Felix Sater and Tafik Arif, and then going further from there, just who has been behind Trump all of these years. This stuff can start to come out, and there are a few people online who, on social media, who have been putting out really good threads. I don't think they go quite as far as they could with regards to what countries and perhaps various religious groups or that some of the people really surrounding Trump are directly affiliated with. But there's a lot of good information being put out there. And I think that with this Cohen thing, I think that it's important to keep these stories out there in the front line so that people don't really start to look too much into what is really appears to be the real scandals here with Trump and his real lifelong connections. So I think with the Cohen thing, and you know, good luck getting Robert Mueller to really dig too deeply into any of that stuff. But I mean,
Mueller has the papers. I mean, they raided Cohen's office, so we'll see where all that goes. And one place it might go is towards this peed on by hookers story, where Trump may be having to plead the Fifth about that. This was a pretty interesting video from the Young Turks, who are a little too mainstream for my taste most of the time. But this is kind of amusing that Trump, apparently, if Mueller is telling the truth, is squirming, making up fake alibis about, you know, to try to prove to the whole world that this wasn't true. He protests too much, according to this account anyway.
Well, it's clear that, I mean, Trump is not this, you know, once again, I go back to Alex Jones and this alternative media narrative of Trump as being this so-called alternative media, InfoWars is really mainstream, narrative of Trump being like this, this man of just he's moral and all this. I mean, he's the last thing from it. I mean, you don't have to believe that he literally, you don't even have to literally believe he went and like, urinated with a bunch of prostitutes on a hotel wall to understand that this man is not this moral beacon that he's been made out to be by so many. I mean, just look at the Epstein connection surrounding all around him with people like Dershowitz and the common connection to pro-Trump media figures like Mike Cernovich, and then the even the allegation by a then 13-year-old that she was, sexually assaulted by Donald Trump. This I think got maybe one or two back page articles, I think maybe in British media. I think maybe Amy Goodman mentioned it one time just days prior to the election. Never been mentioned ever since, even within the mainstream media, which is claims it is so out to destroy Donald Trump. And stories like this ultimately will get the Trump base further behind him because they'll see him as the victim of a media witch hunt.
Indeed. And of course, we don't hear a whole lot about Jeffrey Epstein, the Mossad's sexual
Exactly.
blackmail specialist, who has got Bill Clinton and Donald Trump and so many other people down to Lolita Island, and where he presumably filmed them. That explains a whole lot about how the Israelis are able to totally run the United States. Well, speaking of the Israelis running the United
Here
States
we
and
go.
everywhere else, or so a lot of other places anyway, our next story has this. Isn't this pathetic? This poor guy, Trayon
Yeah.
White, the DC councilman, is under fire for what? Because he said something about the Rothschilds maybe controlling the weather. I'm not sure
Which was
that's.
translated to the Jews. He didn't say anything about Jews. He said Rothschild. So now Rothschild equals Jew. That's the media's own
That's an insult to the
anti-Semitic.
Jews.
Yeah, that's anti-Semitism from the
From the
media.
media.
They're associating Rothschilds with Jews. He didn't say Jews. He said Rothschilds.
That's
They're
right. I
practicing
think the
anti-Semitism.
ADL really should be, prosecuted for hate speech for suggesting that Rothschilds represent
Yeah,
Jews. I mean, that's the worst thing you could say about
Just like they
Jews.
say globalist is Jew. I mean, globalist is a dog whistle term for Jews. I mean, that's anti-Semitism right there. They're almost like they're encouraging people to believe these things. And I gotta say, with this Trayon White story here, with I mean, it's so pathetic, number one, how him stating something, that his freedom of speech is getting him into trouble. And by the way, I love how the Patriot Tucker Carlson had on this Jewish neoconservative Mark Stein on his program to mock this guy for insinuating that there may be weather there may be conspiracies to control weather and that the Rothschilds might be behind it. But I mean, this is just an example of the double standards here. How many donations to and from, when you look at when you look at Congress, to and from Israeli Zionist type of organizations, entities go completely unreported or go praised, yet, oh, one donation from the Nation of Islam. Oh, that's so terrible. But when you look at actually, and this will go into the next slide here, if you just want to go to the next slide real quick.
Right, this was my radio show, actually. I had Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad, he's from the Nation of Islam, talking about this, and he pointed out that the ADL, which is, of course, part of B'nai B'rith, the Anti-Defamation League is called the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, which is a Jewish Freemasonic organization. He points out that this, Freemasonry is all about death oaths to be keep secrets and things like that. Perfect cover for organized crime, and that's obviously what B'nai B'rith really
Yes,
is. It's a
exactly.
cover for the Kosher Nostra. It
Yeah.
is the mafia. It's organized crime, and everything they do bears that out pretty much, except for the occasional little dribs and drabs of charity works they do to try to disguise what their real function is.
Exactly. And Jeremy and I, we did a couple of programs based on the research of the late William Cooper, who did a seven-part series on the history of the Anti-Defamation League, as well as the elements within the LaRouche organization, who put out a lot of really good articles exposing the history of the Anti-Defamation League. And when you actually see this, you realize just what an insult it is that the ADL is going to be giving Starbucks employees and executives quote-unquote sensitivity training lessons. You realize just how much of an insult this is when you realize just how complicit this co organization has been in perpetuating all of this non-stop, what would be described as bigotry and discrimination. The real feelings that organizations such as the ADL, the top leadership, the upper echelons have, not just towards African Americans, not just towards white Americans, but also not even just towards Muslims, but also towards Jews. I mean, the ADL has been complicit in committing crimes against Jewish people and in perpetuating Jewish paranoia and fear of non-Jews. So it's just such an insult all the way around. The fact that this man is being vilified so strongly for, expressing his right to free speech It's ridiculous. It's just absolutely absurd and pathetic that the ADL is able to get away with sensitivity training lessons to Starbucks employees after an example of you might call discrimination from within a specific Starbucks location.
Well, the ADL and its sensitivity training, I guess, from there we can segue over to Canada, where in Calgary, B'nai B'rith Freemasonic Lodge number 816, which is one of those local lodges where, again, as I pointed out, the charitable activities are used as a smokescreen for organized crime. And we all know that the Bronfman family is the organized crime kingpin family that runs Canada. They, ever since they made far more money than Al Capone and all the American bootleggers put together manufacturing alcohol during Prohibition, the Bronfman family has been the number one organized crime family of Canada. And they run Canada through the ADL, which is a front for their crime syndicate. And
Exactly.
here we have Rachel Notley, the premier of Alberta, basically going and kissing the ring of the ADL. It's disgusting. And of course, the ADL is notorious among False Flag Weekly News fans for, or the B'nai B'rith rather, for leading the charge in this hideous persecution and witch hunt against our colleague, Professor Anthony Hall, who's had the temerity to tell some truth while holding a professorship at the University of Lethbridge.
Unfortunately, this bodes very well, I guess, for Miss Notley's political career, unfortunately, since she's completely showing already a dereliction of her duty and that she's completely and absolutely unwilling to speak up for the rights of one of her own constituents there in her province, and that being Tony Hall and all the persecution he's faced. But yes, it's going to be good for her political fortunes. Maybe she'll end up like Stephen Harper someday. Maybe she'll be the new another honoree, by the way, as mentioned in this article. Maybe she'll be the new political hope for Canada after. Who knows? But it's just, once again, it's just another sad state of affairs. She's completely shown that she's not willing to protect her citizen, to protect her the constituents of her province. So, I
And of
mean,
course,
that's
the
how you
ring she's
get
kissing
rewarded.
here, the ring she's kissing is not the Jewish community as a whole. The
No,
it's
it's not.
B'nai B'rith, which is in the ADL, which is a front for B'nai B'rith. These again are Freemasonic organizations disguising organized crime syndicates run by billionaire crime kingpins, and these are the people who are terrorizing and robbing everyone, Jew, Gentile, whoever. And they want to scare ordinary Jewish people into thinking that everybody hates them because people maybe have a problem with the Rothschilds, as everybody should have a problem with the Rothschilds. Maybe people have a problem with the Bronfman family, the organized crime syndicate that owns Canada. If I were Canadian, I would certainly have a problem. I would dedicate my life to overthrowing those creeps. But if you have
I
a
would.
problem with them, they tell us, then you must hate ordinary Jewish people. So they whip up ordinary Jewish people into a state of terror to plunder them and get their donations and make even more money and perpetuate their evil rule.
And as we see with the alt-right, quote unquote alt-right, with all these likely agent provocateurs running around on the alt-right, your Daily Stormers, which is also involved with Gold, Mr. Goldberg was worked with, wrote for the Daily Stormer for a time. Clearly, there's elements. Clearly, I think these ADL, B'nai B'rith types, they welcome people to believe that, that just collectively blame the Jews as an entity for all their problems. I mean, they welcome that because it fills their coffers because it continues to perpetuate Jewish paranoia and fear within the Jewish community. And by promoting these agent provocateurs as being legitimate faces of hatred of Jews and of anti-Semitism, that continues to call for their own pockets, and they'll continue to promote these figures who just go out there and tell people, scream into a bullhorn, how the Jews as an entity collectively are responsible for all of your problems. And I don't think that this helps us out at all.
Absolutely not. No, that's that. The people who give us this blanket hatred of Jews, well, half of them I think are pretty much working for B'nai B'rith and other of these groups, and the other half are, they're deluded, they're immature, they in some cases may have been persecuted so badly by the other side that they actually start really hating, because it's natural to hate people who persecute you. I mean, if I were in Tony Hall's shoes, would I ever hate the creeps who are doing this to me? You know, and I've been persecuted myself a little too, so I can speak from experience. So that's where this is coming from. But as you say, it only helps them to actually think that ordinary Jewish people or the Jewish community as a whole is the problem. The problem is that psychopathic elements in among the Jewish elite have been manipulating Jews and others for 3,000 years, as Laurent Guyonneau points out in his book From Yahweh to Zion, which I still think is the best thing I've ever seen about the so-called Jewish question.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I was getting a little bit of a strange background noise there when you were talking there. I don't know what that was, but you're absolutely right. I mean, and it's and that's not to absolve criminal, you know, people within the Jewish community of their crimes and of their responsibility for their crimes. That's not to, because, you know, we absolutely need to be honest, and we need to be absolutely forthright and honest about the disproportionate Jewish influence within all of these various entities. We're talking about media or government, politics, finance. We need to be completely honest about this, but I think that we've got to be, you know, we've got to be smart and responsible in how we address this, and just going out and just pointing the finger at Jews and just telling people how collectively the Jews as an entity are responsible for our problems. And I mean, I don't think that helps. I mean, you know, this is how they act towards, say, when they try to want to collectively hold Germans responsible for all the, you know, we're collectively evil as a society for things that may or may not have happened 70 years ago. I think that, you know, we've got to be better than that. And it's interesting, and I'll go on here because we've got time constraints here, but it's interesting how in these exposés of the Anti-Defamation League from someone like William Cooper, who was very, 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 very adamant in his that he was not criticizing Jews as an entity. He's not, you know, he's not blaming Jews for things. Or the LaRouche Pack, which seems to have a more or less kind of a British Freemasonic type of view in terms of where the world's power levels are. I think that by exposing the ADL and its Masonic background, a lot of the crimes have been evolved without specifically focusing on Jews as an entity. They've done more to expose, I think, quote unquote, Jewish power than a lot of these people who just spend all their time talking about how evil the Jews are. So.
Indeed. Well, if you want to blame some, you know, blame all the world's problems on some broad, sweeping generalization, you know, somebody or something is responsible for all the world's problems, who would you blame? Well, in the next slide, we see just the first of our stories about techno-dystopia. And I would say technology is the one, if you're going to blame something, technology isn't such a bad choice. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, may not have been entirely wrong. I think he certainly was wrong in blowing up people who were, some of them were pretty darn innocent, creating horrible suffering. But yeah, I mean, we're entering techno dystopia at full speed, and now you've got this horrific system that can read your thoughts. It's got silent computing with voice to skull technology, and all of this. I mean, we're pretty much already there, Greg. I mean, this is worse than 1984.
Yeah, this is and this is, you know, it's everything that, say, organizations such as Cambridge Analytica have been accused of doing in terms of just this is how an organization like that would operate in terms of getting people's information and manipulating you to think and feel and ultimately vote a certain way. So, I mean, this is it just continues. The technological capabilities to just psychologically and manipulate people just continue to get more and more sophisticated. It's only going to, unfortunately, continue to this trend is going to continue. And that's what programs like this are for, maybe to shed a little light on things like this and how we can perhaps maybe offset a little bit of this so that they just want to keep people from they want to keep people as good patriots and want to keep them from becoming Russian bots. So I mean, they're going to continue to turn up the sophisticated measures of manipulating people in order to ensure that we don't have any more evil Russian bots out there.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with computers that a couple of electromagnetic pulse weapons couldn't take care of. But in the next slide, we have yet another techno dystopia story. Facebook has banned Veterans Today, where I'm an editor. It's been brutally cracking down on free speech of those of us who are critics of the powerful. But they don't have enough time or ability to catch the fake Zuckerberg swindlers. Dozens and dozens of these people have set up fake Mark Zuckerberg accounts and swindled mostly working class and retired people out of vast piles of money. and this has been going on, so in some cases, these accounts have been doing this for like over a decade. Facebook, they can't even catch the fake Zuckerberg swindlers, but they have plenty of time to crush the media.
I wonder if Zuckerberg himself is one of the beneficiaries of these scams. But it shows that, like, you know, they'll claim, you know, people will claim we're out to you know, we're going to implement this or that crackdown in order to, you know, we're going to stop children from seeing pornography, or we're going to stop scams or whatever. But I mean, what they're really focused on are the people that are out there that are talking about things such as false flags and are shedding light on the kind of topics that are being discussed on programs like this. I mean, that's what it's really about. I mean, they could easily have shut down the scam, but I mean, clearly that's not where the intentions of social media giants like Facebook are.
And YouTube, yeah, take YouTube, please. I mean, yeah, we're on YouTube. But as we speak, YouTube is monitoring us with artificial intelligence algorithms, and their computers are deciding whether or not they're going to take us down. I don't want computers to mess with my free speech.
Problem videos. I mean, that's a rather
problem videos. Look at what they call problem videos. Yeah. The list of problem videos starts with, quote, the spread of conspiracy videos.
Oh, of course.
Fake news and violent content from extremist organizations. So the worst problem is the spread of conspiracy videos. Oh my goodness, that means dissidents.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing what we'll pass for on YouTube that can just be spread around without any type of pushback whatsoever. But once again, it's the Russian bots are trying to protect us. I mean, don't worry about how Orwellian this term is of problem videos. I mean, you know, they're doing it for our greater good so that we don't become Russian bots.
Well, thank you so much, YouTube, for helping to stop us from being Russian bots. And I'm going to keep talking about false flags, so take that, BBC. Anyway, moving on to Virginia, the Supreme Court in Virginia says that the police are not allowed to track us through our license plates. They've been following, like, hundreds of thousands, millions of car license plates. They zap, 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 read license plates. Yeah. They know where everybody is. They have a little map where they can see everybody who's in every car and all of this. So total Orwellian tracking technology, total and beyond a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But hey, John. Rutherford at the Rutherford Institute has actually won one.
Yeah, that says shades of this is, I guess, the technology that the people who are behind the MIAC report, my home state of Missouri, wish they had back in 2008, 2009 when they were labeling people who had Ron Paul third party bumper stickers, copies of the Aaron Russo film America Freedom to Fascism, and other type of conspiracy theory type publications and paraphernalia or whatever you want to call it on them. This is the kind of access, the kind of technology that the folks behind the MIAC report in Missouri wish they had back in 2009. But it's a positive sign that the Virginia Supreme Court, whatever its motivations are pushing back on things like this, because this is very clearly as told in the story of the guy who made the complaint, because all of these license plates are being tracked en masse and copied. The times that they copied these plates en masse being tracked and surveilled, I mean, that's just entirely a violation of the collective rights of the citizens of Virginia. So for whatever reason, the Supreme Court has taken this stand, bravo. Congratulations to the Supreme Court of Virginia.
But Greg, if they could track every single vehicle and knew where everybody was at every moment, maybe they could stop these vehicular attacks like this one in Toronto in our next story. But now, Greg, I think identity politics, you know, I think it was already going too far when the Nazis started saying, don't call us Nazis, call us National Socialists. I figured that was as bad as it could get. But now we've got this new group of the guys who can't get laid human, their rights movement.
Yeah.
What kind of identity politics group is this? And now they're conducting truck attacks.
Yeah.
I mean, decline and fall of Western civilization, this is beyond anything I ever could have imagined.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely here. It's twofold real quick. I'll make this point real quick. Twofold here, whereas on one hand, yeah, absolutely not. I mean, it's not a Muslim, well, it's not terrorism, absolutely, because we want to keep this narrative that, you know, Muslims are, when Muslims do it, it's terrorism, it's ISIS, or it's whatever entity that's designed to just keep people's fear alive that will continue to lead to the perpetuation of these illegal wars over here in the Middle East, but also this whole narrative of the sexually frustrated male. I've heard it mentioned with regards to the alt-right before, and it's like, I mean, I think ABC News Nightline did a story on how alt-right, you know, white neo-Nazis in America are like sexually frustrated. That provides cover for like what these people really are, which is most likely that a lot of them are just these controlled agent provocateurs. But I'm also, as much as I'm wary of the Muslim narrative of the Muslim terrorists, I'm also equally, I'm also wary of the white domestic terrorist narrative, because what this does is it keeps alive this idea that of this impending threat of domestic terrorism, whether it's from Muslims or whether it's from white Americans. And that's a narrative that's pushed a lot by more of your, I guess, more left elements. And you know, whether you're blaming whites or Muslims for domestic terrorism, well, let's focus on the Muslims. No, let's focus on the white domestic terrorists. What it's doing is keeping alive this boogeyman of terrorism, which will be used to take people's rights away.
Well, be very afraid of the sleeper cells of the sleeper incels. We have nothing better to do, I guess. Anyway, the dream of frustration and bloodshed. Okay, if you thought that the guys who can't get laid rights movement was as crazy as identity politics could get, how about this one, the Naked Waffle House Shooters? That's right, we've got a new identity politics group, the Naked Waffle House Shooters, committing terrorism. And I guess, to be politically correct, they would tell us, don't call us Naked Waffle House Shooters, call us Naturist Belgian Breakfast Establishment Marxists. So, yeah, whatever.
I haven't followed this. I haven't followed this event much, but I mean, the whole narrative of it, you know, it was the naked white man was targeting black Waffle House customers, and then you had the guy who unarmed the who disarmed the Waffle House shooter. I mean, it's so absurd. It's just another way, I think, to just kind of foment this whole divide mentality. You have the crazed white naked shooter targeting blacks, you have the hero who's a black man, and so it's just, to me, I don't know, I haven't followed this whole lot, but it's just another one of these narratives, at the very least, is being manipulated to try and stoke, divide, and conquer this type of discourse.
So another day, another senseless act of insane violence, or maybe another day, another scripted narrative. Who knows? But anyway, either way you slice it, don't, you know, there's no waffling about one fact, which is that we are definitely witnessing the decline and fall of this civilization. And Solzhenitsyn gave us a prescient warning in 1983. The West's rejection of God will end in misery and terror. And we seem to be there.
Well, I don't know if I'm not quite entirely on board with that, but it's definitely a perspective. It should be talked about as much as any other, and people who provide this perspective, you know, it shouldn't be just portrayed as labeled as bigots or intolerant for simply saying what is a fact, and that, you know, there is a decline in terms of spirituality and of belief in of actual values, which kind of describe a culture and a civilization. We just got to make sure that we go down a logical path with this and not down the Jerry Falwell Satanist and abortionist led us to 9/11 type narrative here. But I mean, it's something that at the very least we should have free discourse about, and people shouldn't be shamed for having this opinion.
Okay, and so we'll have to take up the larger discussion of the role of the decline in religion and spirituality and the collapse of Western civilization at another time, because we're at the end of the hour. So thank you, Greg and Karen. It's been great. Appreciate your sitting
thank
in
for Jeremy, Rock, Michelle, and Tony. I've had a lot of fun today. Thank you.
All right, likewise. Take care. Bye-bye, everybody. See you next week.